From the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv. Sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Hello.
Good day to you, kind sir.
It's almost evening.
I thought you were going to say it's almost Christmas.
It is almost Christmas.
Do you know, having said that, in this part of the world, of course, we're coming to you from Israel, there are now donuts in pretty much every bakery, and donuts are traditionally eaten at Hanukkah, which is around Christmas time, so they've gone 2 months early.
Well, it's end of November this year, Hanukkah.
2 months.
So we've got 6 weeks of donuts.
6 weeks of donuts, that's a lot. Do you like any particular donuts?
I like the traditional ones full of jam. I don't go for this fancy schmancy cream and frosting and hundreds and thousands or whatever they're called.
I hear you. If I have one, I have six, so I try to have none.
With 6 weeks of donuts, any future trips that we make, we need to go business because we're going to need bigger seats if we have 6 weeks of them.
Let's talk about what's coming up in today's podcast.
We're not going to go very far at all to start with.
Indeed not. We are headed to the ultra-Orthodox city B'nai Brak, which is just outside Tel Aviv. And in fact, you can see it as you fly into the airport.
And to make up for that lack of travel in our first item, I think we should go a really long way for the second one.
We'll be heading to a part of Japan that you may not have heard of, but has a wonderful history, and that will be brought to life by our special guest, Takashi Yamada.
Should we have a quiz?
Why not?
Question number one. B'nai Brak is mentioned in the biblical book of Joshua as land allotted to which of the tribes of Israel?
And question number two. Each spring, Japan celebrates the Kanemaru Matsuri Festival. What is that festival celebrating?
The answer's coming up at the end of the podcast.
Yum ba ba bum bum yum ba 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 bum bum yum ba 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 bum bum ba 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 bum yum ba ba bum bum yum ba 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 bum yum ba 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 bum. Here's Mark
and David.
Tradition. We are in the modern equivalent of a shtetl, a European, Polish, Lithuanian village. This is B'nai Brak in Israel. Why are we here, Mark?
We're here to fill our faces and to do some fressing.
Fressing being a Yiddish word. There's going to be lots of Yiddish tonight, I imagine, for eating. And as you know, we love to talk about food and we prefer the gourmet style. But I think tonight it's going to be, well, in the old days, it would have been something like goose fat, but it's going to be lots and lots of oil.
We're normally used to oat cuisine. Today we have potato cuisine, noodle cuisine, and best of all, smoked fish cuisine.
We're on a tour with a wonderful man called Pinny. Hopefully we'll hear more from him later. We are doing a pre-Shabbat food tour of B'nai Brak. It's Thursday night. Lots of people are out on the streets. They don't go partying here. They go food shopping so that they've got plenty to feed their families.
And I'm now talking into a magic wand, which is a microphone. And every time we talk into it, a little crowd gathers around us.
More later. We're off to begin our tour.
The first stop, we give two kinds of kegel. What do you say, kegel or kugel? I won't make a spoiler. I will explain that on the tour.
So we've now come into a bakery. What's it called? Katz?
Konditoria Katz.
Konditoria Katz. Now, yet again, Mark has dipped in while I am stuck holding the microphone and tape recorder. Mark, what are you eating? If I'm not mistaken, Mark is eating a
cinnamon whirl.
Fresh?
Very fresh. And very B'nai Brak. It's like very floury, but with plenty of sugar and cinnamon.
Is it chewy?
Yeah.
Because I know my favourite sort of Friday night bread, they call challah, is the vishnitz, which is like a very chewy, cakey, almost heavy.
Yeah. I mean, it is a cake, but it's a very cakey cake.
Most cakes tend to be cakey cakes.
Indeed.
And that's a good place to stop, I think.
How much influence has the Shtisel show made on the visiting B'nai Brak? A big influence, not only in Israel. You won't believe that. One day I get a phone call from a reporter from Swedish radio. She wants to come with me to B'nai Brak to make a show in B'nai Brak. And I asked her, what do you have with B'nai Brak? And she said, Wow, you don't know? Netflix has put on Stissel with a Swedish translation. And Sweden is not stopped speaking about Stissel in Bnei Brak. I must make a show in Bnei Brak. And she came with me 3 times to Bnei Brak.
We're at Delicatess, and it's kiddush time. It's fish, it's salad, chopped liver, gefilte fish. Supposedly the vodka's coming out, but it looks very watery.
So I think it's very important at this point, because we're talking about Pinny's tour, to say that it's not just food. If it was, it means that we've been eating for 4 hours. This is a 3 to 4 hour tour of Bnei Brak, where he uses food purely as the break and a vehicle for describing what is a very particular, peculiar people. We're talking about a part of the world that really doesn't exist in very many places.
Yep, the microphone's out and a crowd is gathering again. We've been into the Rebbetzin's house and had some Torah from the Rebbetzin, a really nice sit-down talk. Pinny's been telling jokes all the way. We've even seen a Mahadrin kosher internet store.
It is truly a different world to learn about the different dress codes of the different Hasidic sects, to learn the differences between those people who came from more of the Ukraine and Southeast Poland as opposed to those who came from Lithuania. There's a whole world out there that I guess people who are not exposed to the religious way of life simply don't know.
And we're having Kiddush. Kiddush is a celebration. Before Kiddush, we learned about Shidduchim and arranged marriages, and now we can celebrate that.
Getting into all the Yiddish and the Hebrew. There's only one word left.
Gewalt.
That wasn't the one I had in mind. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
People get very excited from many things that are very special and unique to the city. Like, how do you download your podcast in Bnei Brak? I know, it's a rabbinical podcast, Torah lessons. How do you download a podcast in a city where you don't have no internet? That's something very interesting. And we stop by that machine, that special computer, which is open to the public. And sometimes we see guys standing on the line waiting with their MP3 to make download their next Torah podcast or Jewish education podcast, which is very interesting. So there are many places that people are going, wow, I didn't think of that this way. And this is the part that I like most in the tour. People are opening wide eyes and opening a big mouth and saying, wow. And the laughter is the second part that I like in the tour.
Our tour is sadly at an end. We've been wandering around Bnei Brak for 4 hours. We're completing it in Shloimele. How on earth, Mark, would you describe this place?
It's like a whole market all in one circuit of a shop. You've got ice cream, you've got sweets, you've got pizzas, you've got chamin or chulent as it's known, like a stew. You've got bread, you've got crisps, you've got everything all in one little circuit.
It's now fairly late on a Thursday night. We're heading towards 10 o'clock, but this place is absolutely happening. Now, there's no loud disco music or anything like that, but the streets are full of people. There's a man walking past us now with a couple of brooms that he's just bought. There's a woman walking the other way with a gloriously topped ice cream. Old gentleman with a long beard and side curls and ill-fitting trousers. And all of them are doing one thing, and that's getting ready for the Sabbath.
Just to our left, there is a synagogue called Itzkovitz Synagogue. And what's unique about it is open 24/7. You go there, you wait for 9 other men to turn up, so you have your minyan, your 10 people, and then you pray, and then the next one happens, and then the next one happens, and it goes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even Shabbat, obviously, 7 days a week.
I think at this point we should say a big thank you to Pinny Gorelick, who is our guide, and we would like to leave the final word to Pinny. Take it away.
How should people dress when they come to my tour? Well, Bnei Brak is not Me'a Shearim. In Bnei Brak, people can come without a kisui rosh, without a head cover, and with pants, both men and women. Well, I expect women not to come with half naked or very short or something, which it's okay to come like this in Bnei Brak. The street doesn't belong to the Bnei Brak people. But we want to come to the tour and enjoy our time in Bnei Brak. We don't want to make no provocation. Like the Pride March, let's do it in Tel Aviv. That's okay. That's the place. Bnei Brak, let's come very modest in a secular way. I mean, women can come with pants, but not with a very short and very exposed parts of their body. Usually people understand that. And you should wear shoes and not high heels because you're working. Most of the people are finding me a mouth to ear, which they get my phone number and they WhatsApp me somehow from here to there. It's an Israeli phone number. It's 052-3680-112. You can WhatsApp me and I'm really usually answering very quick. Or you can write me by mail. It's pini.gorelick@gmail.com.
Bnei Brak Fact File. El Al flies to Ben-Gurion Airport from most major European cities, plus New York, Boston, Chicago, Johannesburg, and Miami, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Toronto. Air Canada, British Airways, Cathay, Delta, United, and Virgin all fly direct to Tel Aviv. Taxis from Ben-Gurion Airport to Bnei Brak take around 25 minutes and cost between $30 and $50. Trains from Tel Aviv to nearby Bnei Brak cost around $3. Bnei Brak is known for its traditional Eastern European cuisine. Restaurants include Mukhan Umezuman, Hamisada HaYehudit, or the Jewish restaurant, and, of course, what else but shtisel. The currency is the Israeli shekel, and 100 shekels are worth some $31. Hotels near Bnei Brak include the Ramada Ramat Gan, Kfar Maccabiya, and the Prima Link Hotel, Petach Tikva.
And now it's time for the latest travel news from the Jerusalem Post podcast Travel Edition. Assuming there have been no changes by publication time, Israel will open its doors to individual foreign tourists from November the 1st this year. Its borders were shut to foreigners in March 2020, just after the COVID outbreak. Initially, vaccinated visitors from some 40 countries will be admitted. The plan is to expand the scheme some 3 weeks later.
International airlines around the world have announced new routes as COVID fears recede for the time being. Israeli carrier El Al is planning flights to Chicago and Tokyo from April 2022. A month later, Delta will offer a three times a week service between Boston and Tel Aviv.
Brown Hotels Group announced it's opening Ben Gurion's first airport accommodation. The 400-room hotel is slated to open in 2024.
If you don't feel like waiting another 2 years for a hotel room, EasyJet's associated company, Easy Hotel, is opening up to 8 budget hotels in Israel. The first will offer rooms in the Ramat HaChayal business district of Tel Aviv. Room prices will start at some $40 to $50.
And the cost of flights in the United States is still lower today than before the pandemic, according to the International Air Transport Association. That's for both economy and premium seats. The average round-trip flight within the US will set you back $371, about $100 less than in 2018 and 19. What can we do that's completely the opposite of Bnei Brak?
Bnei Brak is totally urban, totally noisy.
So let's stick a pin in a map halfway around the world, somewhere not urban.
Do you know what? Hang on a second.
Maybe we could do that going forward. We just buy ourselves a globe. Oh, you've got one. Spin it round and see where it lands.
Okay, here's a globe. I'm going to make a whizzing whirring sound. Go on, you can turn it.
Just one thing though, make sure it stops on Kiso in Japan.
We're going to Kiso in Japan because that's exactly where it landed. And we're going to do that in the company of Takashi Yamada from the Kiso Ontake Tourism Office. He's going to tell us all about the destination, its history, its food. But first of all, where on earth is it in Japan?
just in the middle of in Japan, we have 49 prefectures, and one prefecture called right above Tokyo, Nagano Prefecture, where the Winter Olympic was held a while ago. In Nagano Prefecture, it divided into three areas, northern part and the middle part and the southern part. We are actually in the middle of the southern part, which is called Kiso Valley, which is 60 kilometers long, steep valley. It's mountains in between, only 20,000 population village here.
You say that it's near Nagano, where you've had the Winter Olympics. Does that mean it's quite a cold place, or it's somewhere you can visit all year round?
You can visit, of course, all year round, but winter time, roughly minus 20. And summertime, actually less than 30 degrees, which is about 28 degrees. The good thing is it's pretty much dry, like Israel.
What does the valley have to offer?
This is actually connected with Edo era period, which is 400 years ago, when the one particular family called Tokugawa family occupied the entire Japan, which over 250 years. You can imagine that one family dominated entire Japan, controlled entire Japan prefecture, the rural areas over 250 years. At that time, Tokugawa family asked every single rural area top people come to Tokyo. But at 400 years ago, of course, there is no public transport, so people needed to walk. So in order to make that happen, Tokugawa actually established five different routes connected with Tokyo. And this Nakasendo trail is a 570 kilometers long trail from Tokyo to Kyoto. Kiso was just in the middle. It is called checkpoint, because Tokugawa was really, really afraid of somebody come to Tokyo, Edo era, smuggle a gun into the city, and somebody try to kill them. So they needed to have that kind of checkpoint. It's called basically immigration. Today, this area, luckily, because of the location, also the isolation, geographically, a lot of old history still remain preserved quite well. So if you come to this region, you will feel, wow, I come to Japan like 400 years ago villages, because still they are as they are.
In addition to the wonderful villages, but also between those places is magnificent scenery. It's interesting that you were talking about Kiso as being a checkpoint, a center point on that route between Kyoto and Tokyo, because that brings us on to accessibility today. How easy is it to reach the valley and to move between the valley areas? Can we reach you by bus, by train, by car?
Usually international guests come to the major city first. For example, from Israel, probably you coming flying into Tokyo or Osaka, because there are major cities. But from there, let's take this example from Tokyo. You take Shinkansen from Tokyo to Nagano or even Nagoya, which is 90 minutes.
That's the bullet train.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then you change to the another express train, then another 90 minutes, you are able to reach our region called Kiso Valley. Once you come, there are so many Japanese traditional accommodation called ryokan, because this region, as you can imagine, this volcanic activities is always going on with this Mount Ontake. So it's actually Mount Ontake has been activating the good quality of onsen every single day. Then once you come, it's actually easy to travel around in the region, because all rail network is actually across our region. So as long as you have the Japanese rail pass, which is, you have consecutive days that you can use as much as you can within this rail network, it is also available. Also today, English signage is everywhere. So we do have a lot of English speaking guys in the region.
You spoke about the tradition of the region briefly. As a traveler coming from the other side of the world, are there any cultural sensitivities as a traveler one should have to not offend people in the region?
We don't have any cultural sensitivity in there. We are quite old town, of course, but today, because we are accepting international guests, we also respect other side of the culture. Food, we actually take care of the dietary requirements. So if you have any dietary restrictions or food restrictions, if you ask in advance, they can accommodate.
I'm so glad you brought up the subject of food, because it's dear to Mark and my heart. Tell us about the type of cuisine that we're going to find in the Kiso Valley area, because when we think Japanese cuisine, you know what we're thinking. It's sushi, it's ramen, and so on. Is that the case, or is it something very different?
We are located in the middle of the mountains, so basically fish is coming from the river, ocean from Sea of Japan or Pacific Ocean. A plant-based food is quite sustainable here. I think Kiso is one of the slow food destinations. We have a very typical red turnip called Sunki. 400 years ago, we didn't have the salt. So somebody actually embedded this vegetable to contain salts. Because we are in the middle of a mountain, we couldn't get the salt from the sea. It's too far. So today, this became the traditional vegetables. A lot of ryokans offers very typical kaiseki meals, which probably 10 different dishes on the plate. Then small bites, you probably eat clockwise. That kind of traditions also remains quite well. Also, Kiso beef. In Japan, in fact, we have a lot of particular beef, Kobe beef, whatever beef, forever beef. Similarly, at Kiso, we do have the Kiso beef, which is quite good quality.
How do our listeners find out more?
If you are individual travelers, you may look at the JNTO English website. They do have the dedicated section for Kiso Valley. If you type on Google Kiso Valley, you may hit our official website called en.visitkiso.com. There are plenty of information on our website. Also on the YouTube, I think you may have a look at our video. So that's something consumers can find easily.
Takashi Yamada, thank you very much for showing us a glimpse of Kiso.
You've been doing this with a smile on your face the whole way through, which means that you clearly love the work that you do.
If we don't have a passion, then how can we have the international guests happy in the end? So this is what we do.
Kiso Fact File. You can fly to Tokyo or Osaka from most major North American cities, Munich, Paris, London, Frankfurt, Amsterdam, Brussels, Rome, or Istanbul. El Al is planning a direct service to Tokyo from April 2022. Kiso's Japan Rail Station is 3.5 hours from Tokyo by train, 2.5 hours from Kyoto, and 1.5 hours from Nagoya. Accommodation is mainly in ryokan, which are Japanese traditional inns, with half board included. Onsens, or hot mineral bathing spas, are offered at each ryokan. $1 will buy you 112 Japanese yen. Kiso has a typical highland climate. Humidity is low and stable throughout the year, and rainfall is comparatively light. Favorite local food includes soba, or buckwheat noodles, gohemochi, which are sticky grilled rice cakes, oyaki, a dumpling made from fermented buckwheat dough with a vegetable fruit or red bean paste filling, and for true foodies, Kiso beef is a rare treat.
And as ever, as we draw towards the end of the podcast, we have a couple of thank yous. And they are to both Pini and Takashi, who were such wonderful tour guides to B'nai Brak and to Kiso Valley. Mark, what about people who want to help us get the word out?
If you enjoyed the podcast, please...
I did.
No, the listener out there.
Okay.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please share links to it with your friends. If you didn't enjoy the podcast, lie and say you did and share the links with your friends.
And subscribe.
Subscribe, give us 5-star ratings and all the other fun things that you can do.
All that's left for us to do before we say goodbye
quiz.
Is the quiz. Do you want to go first then?
I'm very keen.
Go on.
Question number one. B'nai Brak is mentioned in the biblical book of Joshua as land allotted to which tribe of Israel? And the answer was Dan.
And question number two. Each spring, Japan celebrates the Kanemaru Matsuri Festival. What is that festival celebrating? And the answer, it celebrates both male and female fertility.
And in case you're wondering, David chose that question. You can edit that out if you don't want it.
Right.
Or you can keep it in and keep in this bit about me talking about you editing me out. Just for total.
Oh, good Lord. That's the end of the podcast for this time. Hope you'll join us for the next travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Sei gesund.
And sayonara.